So let's talk about Labor's budget then. Somebody says, about time somebody talked about this sort of stuff, says a texter. So that's good, meaning the economics. $8 billion more for health over 4 years, $4 billion for education, $43 million for 1,000 extra police. I'm assuming that's not on top of what National's promised.
No, I believe National, if I... They're promising 800,
That's right.
Labour is saying another 200.
$2 billion a year for housing, surpluses in all 4 years reaching $2.6 billion in 2021-22, resumed contributions to the New Zealand Super Fund... Crackdown on multinationals, and that's expected to deliver $600 million over 3 years, presumably picking up from where Judith Collins has left off, and ongoing debt repayment. Does it make sense, Bruce?
Well, Kerry, I think there's obviously two parts to this budget. There's a revenue-raising side of the line, and then there's a spending side of the line. I mean, I think on the spending side of the line, Labor really had nowhere else to go. National delivered a very balanced budget, targeted low to middle-income New Zealand. And so to differentiate themselves, I think Labor really had to go out there with something big, and they've done that with some big proposals on health and education, as you said, $12 billion between those two areas, as well as the super fund and a different package for low to income families. So I think the spending side of the line makes sense if you're the Labor Party. I think what was more interesting is actually the revenue side of the line and what they've said and also what they've not said. So they've proposed removing or not going ahead with the tax cuts that National proposed and replacing it with their own package. You know, that's not that interesting in itself. What is interesting is they haven't come out with a proposal to increase the top marginal tax rate, which they did in 2014. There's no proposals for a capital gains tax like they had in 2014. So the question is, well, then how do you pay for all of this feel-good spending?
That is an election promise, I believe, isn't it, to not raise taxes? Haven't they promised that?
Well, they promised to not to cancel the tax cuts, which you could say is a tax increase. But yes, they have come out and said, and the Greens obviously haven't said this, but when you've seen any of the co-presentations between Labor and the Greens, they have said that they will not be increasing the top tax rate. That's not their policy. And so I think that's so they are then reliant on a couple of things. One is we've just been with a caller talking about debt. Their plan is reliant on lower budget surpluses over time. I mean, by 2021, the government was looking at getting to $7 billion. Labor's looking at getting to 2.6. So that inherently means a lower repayment of debt. So, you know, you can't get something for nothing. If we're going to have all this increased expenditure, it's going to come at the cost of more borrowing. The other side of the line is really these other measures like multinational tax avoidance, cracking down on that, getting $600 million over 3 years versus the government's plan to get $250 million over 4 years. And I think if there's any sort of weakness or concern in this package, that's where it lies, because I certainly, as a tax professional, have my doubts about the ability to raise $600 million from multinationals over the next 3 years, I think.
Isn't it a bit like Dr. Cullen looking at student loans as an asset? You know, it's wishful thinking.
You mean in terms of the spending?
Just in terms of looking at getting that money from the multinationals. Nice idea, be great if we could. This is how much you could get if you could get your hands on it. And Dr. Cullen did the same thing. This is how much we would get back if they all paid back their loans.
Every party, if you look on their websites, every party, you look at Labor, National, Greens, New Zealand First, they all have a policy of clamping down on multinational tax avoidance, right?
Thank God for this.
Well, the Western world is looking
into exactly. The world has changed. Yeah, exactly. And it's just a matter of how you do it. Labor are proposing, with their diverted profits tax, introducing measures that are in place in Australia and in the UK, which we haven't quite implemented. There's a question about whether they may or not be successful. There's a question about whether the money is really there. And there's a timing issue. I mean, these things are complicated. And these disputes you can have with multinationals can drag on for years and years and years. So even if you get the money, you're not going to be getting it in 2020. You might be getting it in 2025.
Yeah, but that's what I mean about the wishful thinking aspect of it. It's just...
I think, though, when it comes to budgets, though, this is why it would be so wonderful. And this, I mean, the Greens were the last to propose this, is to have some sort of a budget office like they have in the US and in the UK, where political parties make these promises and then they actually go and price them and see how many people it would affect and see whether the numbers stack up. Because Right now, what are we doing? We're having to take Labor's word for it. A few months ago, when we were talking about National's budget, what were we having to do? Having to take their word for it.
At least we have an open book policy now as a result of Muldoon. You know, that was just outrageous. Mm. You know, at least now the party that comes into power knows what the state of the books is. That was exciting times, the 80s. I'm sorry you missed them. They were very...
Well, he remember when he wouldn't hand over power either.
I know. Yeah. It was just... Yeah. It's just, I mean, you have to wonder how he got away with it for so long. We were a different country then, but they were wild old times.
It also happened in the 1990 election where National came in and discovered that we were about bankrupt and BNZ was about to collapse.
That's right, again.
Yeah, so we had it twice in 6 years, so.
Thank God we've learned from that as well.
Yeah. Well, have we?
You missed the roller coaster of the 80s, Mark, never mind.
I know. I hear lots of stories about the media in the 80s as well and go,
oh, yeah, that
it,
was
really,
fun.
Really missed, really missed out there.
Yep, that was a lot of fun. But no, I mean, I think we are much more sensible now and there aren't the huge skews, which I suppose also makes it harder for a party to differentiate, to be elected.
Mm. I mean, I think you guys touched earlier on just after the news on an interesting point I thought was interesting too, was about the New Zealand Super Superannuation Fund and restarting the contributions. I think we're certainly in favour of that.
Is that the lesson from the 80s, that you don't borrow to buy shares?
Well, I think we're at a point where our government debt is so low and is forecast to go down that, you know, I'm in favour of that money being put aside, because fundamentally after the 80s and the 70s, I certainly don't have a great trust of politicians, and I like the idea that money is sequestered away to help fund superannuation, rather than sort of being Pollyanna and hoping that it's all going to be okay in 20 to 30 years. So I think the sooner we can... I can understand them pausing the contributions after the GFC, like you said, Kerry, and then the Christchurch earthquake. There was so much going on, but I think now we are in a steady fiscal state. It's about time we started increasing those contributions.
Somebody has sent in a text saying it wasn't the wind around our skirts that saved us, it was the earthquakes that saved New Zealand. $15 billion of overseas insurance money into New Zealand without exporting a thing, just when New Zealand was about to slide into recession. Fair comment?
I don't think there's many New Zealanders who would say the Christchurch and Kaikoura earthquakes were a good thing. I think all the economic activity that's been lost and all the heartache in Christchurch, I can't agree with that comment at all.
Okay, and I do like this comment. Alternative budget has a connotation of alternative facts. They might have thought to give it a more appealing name, because alternative doesn't mean better or smarter, which is true.
Not in 2017.
Which is quite true.
Bruce Benacki here with us, partner at KPMG. If you do have any questions for him, feel free to call 0800 80 1080. But we are talking Labor's alternative budget.
And
didn't have enough time to think of another name for it. So if you've got any thoughts on that, as we said before, basically the difference is, do you want the tax cut or do you want more money spent on health and education and less debt paid down? That's kind of your decision, really, isn't it?
Or even, I actually think the tax cut's a bit of a red herring, Mark. I think, they're saying the tax cut was $1.5 billion. They're turning around spending $900 million straight back in a different working for families type package. So the only people who are really missing out are people like yourselves who don't have kids, and so you'd get your tax cut removed.
He does let us know.
Yeah, I know. It's the middle to high income earners who have kids and the people who don't have kids who are missing out, and you're basically pushing more money into those who do. And look, I have kids. Kids are expensive and they're, you know, and time consuming to bring up. You need all the help you can get. But at the same time, it's all very well for people to sit there and say, well, I don't need a $1,000 tax cut. But if you're earning $70,000 and you're a single person, or you're a couple relying on that one income living in Auckland, I'm sure you certainly don't feel wealthy right now, and you could probably use that money too.
Always find a use for another $1,000.